And so last week's handout, there's a few over there, as we've always said. Just let Karen and or me know if you want previous handouts. We can email those to you if you want them by email. So last week when we started, Karen, one of the things Karen did was kind of introduce us to the intelligence center of the head triad. So hopefully you've been with us throughout most of this. For those of you who are new this week, we are now, I guess, in the eighth of nine personality traits or types that we're looking at from the Enneagram. We've looked at the body triad, which is 8, 9, and 1. We've looked at the heart triad, which is 2, 3, 4. And we began last week with personality type 5 in the head triad. And just as a reminder, kind of where I want to begin today. First of all, if you got the handout that says at the top of it, "Becoming the Me I Was Created to Be," go on and pull that out. If you remember the body triad, that particular intelligence center, the GQ center, those folks, 8, 9, and 1s, they struggle with anger. But they all struggle with anger in a different way. For the heart types, the struggle that is real is shame. And they all struggle with shame in a different way. And when we got introduced this past week to the IQ, the head triad, and fives, what we really are launching into there is a triad that struggles with fear in very different ways for each number. Talked about 5 last week. We're talking about 6 this week. So we begin today. I want to invite you to take a look at the handout, Becoming the Me I Was Created to Be. And what I want to do first is read the first sentence and then the bolded language of the quote that you'll see there by Mark Thibodeau. And just listen to these words. Whether you identify as a 6 or whatever number you identify, this is really reality for all of us, I think, as believers in some part of our life we experience this. But listen to these words. Again, I'm going to read the first sentence and then the bolded language of the Mark Thibodeau quote. "A thorough reading of the Gospels would reveal that perhaps the most persistent command from God is not about sex or violence or a lack of religious practice, but rather about not being afraid." So down at the bottom, "God sometimes calls me to do things that are genuinely frightening. And in those situations, it is natural to be afraid, but I can choose not to feed and not to be fed by that fear. Rather, I can choose to act boldly, trusting in the promise that God will take care of those who follow His will. Courage works in the midst of fear without eliminating it." Listen to that one more time. "Courage works in the midst of fear without eliminating it. Courage is an assurance and confidence in God in the midst of trials, limitations, past failures, and future dangers." As we begin this morning, I want to invite you, as we have frequently, just to close your eyes for a second. And I want to ask you to take just a minute and ask yourself, or identify, is there anything in your life at this moment in time that triggers fear in you? And take just a second to think about that. And as you're thinking about what it might be that comes to mind immediately, listen to these words from Joshua. I'm going to read them twice, but with a bit of silence between readings. Think about your situation. Listen to these words of the Lord. "Be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid. Do not be discouraged, for the Lord your God will be with you wherever you go." Just let those words soak in for a second. Be strong and courageous. Do
not be afraid, do not be discouraged. For the Lord your God will be with you wherever you go. We pray that in the name of Jesus, amen. So, class, we're going to do just a little bit different this week, but really not a lot different, but we want to introduce some folks to you that are going to help us out with class this week, because Karen and I are going to be gone next week. We are actually celebrating an anniversary. I'm not going to tell you which one unless Karen gives me permission. And I have not requested that permission yet, so I'm not going to disclose that. If she wants to, when she comes up later, she can. So next week we're going to be away for the week, and then we'll be back the following week to wrap up class. But two very special people who have become near and dear to us just over the last few weeks are Mark and Sarah Wilson, and many of you know the Wilsons. Of course, Karen and I have known Mark since he was a wee little lad, because he played basketball with our oldest son in high school. But Mark and Sarah have been with us at Harpeth Hills for about 9 months now. They relocated to Tennessee from Arkansas, where they spent the previous 7 years. And Mark and Sarah have three kids. They have Roe 5, Willa 3, and Ollie 1. I want to read something to you that Mark and Sarah shared with me, because I think this tells you a little bit about their story. And perhaps this week or next week, if they want to elaborate on that, they're welcome to. But this is why I think you'll understand, one of the reasons we want them to stand before you. And what they will do today is really share with you the basics and the truth about Enneagram 6. But here's what Mark and Sarah share about themselves. Mark and Sarah found the Enneagram a couple of years ago in a season of great suffering, both in their marriage and in having to learn to navigate an extraordinary and rare disease diagnosis that their then 18-month-old daughter received. We all experience trauma in our lives in varying proportions, and the Enneagram has played a small but vital role in helping Mark and Sarah navigate that season of unrest with greater grace for each other and compassion for those in their community. Sarah may deny this, but she is indeed an Enneagram nut. Over the last 18 months, she has immersed herself in the wisdom of the Enneagram and found herself leading small groups, teaching Bible classes designed to help women kickstart an authentic spiritual journey and healing process that can begin through the Enneagram. And for this week and next week as well, you should know that Sarah is an undeniable 7. Which you'll have no problem discussing with you next week. Mark, on the other hand, admits that he is no scholar of the Enneagram, but has been the primary beneficiary of Sarah's passion and understanding of it. I understand that as well, my brother. He will tell you that he is no expert in these things, but he has spent the better part of 2 years studying the nature of shame, including where shame tends to show up in the Enneagram or on the Enneagram, and learning how to replace that shame with our true identities through spiritual formation. According to Mark, he is a recovering, performance-driven type 3. So we have invited Sarah and Mark to share with you all about 6s. So if you guys would come up, that would be great. Would y'all welcome them?
I'm not allowed to speak first.
No, I was going to say, if you could not tell, my type 3 husband wrote that. I would never say those things about myself. So, anyways.
Completely disconnected from my feelings.
Yeah. Also, I have always sat in the front row in this class, and if I would have realized how many of y'all were in here, maybe I would have been less excited about teaching this class. So, I am a 7. Things can get quite weird when you let a 7 up here. So bear with me, and we will get going. Yeah. Okay, so today we're talking about 6s, and they are the true bearers of the faithful image of our God, and a God that you can trust, okay? Their head knowledge is primary, so constant thinkers, always up in their head. They have their heart triad, or their EQ, repressed, and they have their gut triad repressed.
Yeah, so and this is something that has really resonated with me listening to Bob and Karen talk about it, but we've talked about in the past when we went through the body triad and the heart triad, how the nines being in the middle of that triad are the most detached from the anger that they struggle with. And with threes being in the middle of the heart triad, they are the most detached from the feelings that embody that triad. The same is true with sixes in that they happen to be the most detached from their thoughts.
Yes, and you guys that are sixes out there might be thinking, well, that is absolutely incorrect because my mind is going at all times, even for the fives and sevens. But sixes are known as thinking repressed because a lot of times their thoughts don't settle. So their anxious thoughts are just going and going and going, and it's unproductive thinking. So that's why it's classified as repressed. Okay, so if you'll remember, the primary driver for the head triad is fear, okay? And oftentimes that fear presents itself as anxiety in sixes. So I am very, very close to a six. Some of you might know her. It is my sister. So I'm going to tell you a few stories about her today with her permission, but... one of them is defining fear versus anxiety. Okay, so my sister lives in kind of an area where there's lots of creatures around. And so one morning, and she lives by herself.
Arkansas.
So one morning she gets up and what's in her kitchen but a giant snake. So of course, at that point, when you see a snake in your kitchen, you automatically panic and say, oh my goodness, there's a snake in my kitchen. What am I gonna do? You deal with it. You know, for some, you call your dad and have him deal with it. But others, it's the fear of what is happening in that moment, and you deal with the fear at that moment. Okay, so anxiety is now, every morning, what does Anna do when she gets up? She looks for a snake in her kitchen because she is constantly thinking about, there's gonna be a snake in my kitchen, there's gonna be a snake in my kitchen.
A year later.
Yes, so this has been going on. Now there's snakes all over her house. We don't know, there's just, yeah. So that is anxiety versus fear. Fear is the action of something, working on something right away.
Yeah, so, and this is more of a continuation of the themes that Bob and Karen have been bringing to us the last several weeks. But you know, the body triad, if you're in that triad, you believe I am what I do. And the heart people, believe the lie that I am who people say I am. And the head people believe this a similar lie in that I am what I have. And they kind of elaborated on that this week, but I just wanted to inject that as a reminder that the lie that the six is most susceptible to believing.
Yeah, and oftentimes this lie manifests for sixes in security. What you have is security. Did I say that right?
Yeah, the need for security.
The need for security. Thank you.
So yeah, in response to the lie, you have this overwhelming need for safety, stability, and security. That's what I should have said.
Yes. Okay. So again, this is another sister story. So a couple of years back, we went to a lake for my birthday. And I, being seven, thought it was a wonderful idea to go jump in the lake late at night and just have some fun. Okay, so I run down the yard, jump in the lake. All my friends are, you know, with me, coming behind me, and all the sixes stop at the dock, put their life jackets on, like both legs, on their arms, they have the floaties, it's all going good for them. So then I realize, oh goodness, I should have grabbed one of those, but I'm in the water now and I'm treading water and it's gonna be okay. So of course, every few seconds, one of my six friends, because we're in a lake and it's pitch black and all this, feels something, you know, and there's like 10 girls. So it's probably somebody's leg or somebody's arm gracing them. But of course they think it's a snake or it's a fish that's gonna eat me or whatever it is. Well, my sister, who is 6'2", okay, so she's a good head taller than me, feels something touch her, and she is my baby sister. So when she feels something touch her, she immediately, with all of her gumption, sees me and jumps over on me, okay? And what you need to know that I forgot to mention is Sixes are very into community. Sevens are very into independence, okay? So she is on me. Granted, I do not have a life jacket on at all. Been treading water for several minutes now. And she says, "Hold on to me and we'll go down together." And I say, "Get off of me, we're both gonna drown."
Yeah, so it's just a good little snapshot of how susceptible a six is to completely giving in to their fear in need of security and safety at all costs. So,
all right. So since we're on my sister, we're going to talk about childhood wounds. So something happens in your childhood, our childhood, that goes awry, okay? And we all have our message that we tell ourselves. So something in the head triad says, I am not safe, okay? So the default message for sixes is don't trust yourself and don't trust anyone else, okay? So oftentimes to cope, young sixes are very regimented. They put a plan together. They stick to the plan so that they know what's going on. These kids love structure. They love stability.
They're guarded.
The book says this that I loved, and so this might resonate with some of you, the spiritual practice book. This vigilance for security both protects and mitigates against trust. Okay, so you don't have to trust if you've planned ahead.
Yeah, and I think sometimes it's hard for us to recognize the wounds in our lives. I mean, most of us in this room, I mean, I'm not accusing anyone, but we just have done very little work trying to excavate what those wounds are or have been. I hope for all of you that you do that work at some point in your life. But with a six in particular, they may have been a young six around someone with explosive anger or some dealing with some form of absence from an authority figure or someone extremely critical and that would otherwise be providing that safety. So they feel the need to band-aid that wound in these ways of creating safety and security in any way possible, right?
Yeah, very good. So in general, sixes are the sacred guardians of the Enneagram. You sixes are our protectors. You are often known as loyal skeptics, loyal doubters, loyalists. There's several different names to describe the six. Most sixes are misunderstood as pessimistic, but it's really that you guys are great at thinking through worst case scenarios and being the devil's advocate, thinking of all the different scenarios that could play out. Sixes tend to be worriers, but the intent or motive behind that worry and anxiety is to protect themselves from an unsafe environment and the unsafe world we live in. So for sixes right now, with constant access to news and media, it's just bless you. Okay, sixes often go around and ask different people advice, okay? So don't get offended if a six asks for your advice and does not take it. They will survey the room, collecting all of this advice, and then they go with the choice that makes them feel that they can live with, that makes them feel the best. So oftentimes I feel so good about myself because a six asks me for advice. I'm like, of course. And then I realize they've asked 10 other people and I'm like, okay.
And they didn't take yours.
And they didn't take mine. Yeah.
Yeah, don't be offended by that.
Yes.
They're doing the best they can. It actually is a brilliant strategy. I wish I applied it more often. So Sarah mentioned that they are loyalists, and I mean, I think that sometimes we over-identify sixes with loyalty because there's so much more. But just on that point specifically, these are not the group of people that are going to leave a church when things go awry. These are not the people that are going to leave this place when Chris Smith just really hits a rut, or The song service is just pathetic, or
it's just being recorded.
Yeah. In that case, so like when you let Bill Brady like on the bongo drum, like, the Sixes aren't leaving for that reason, okay? Despite it, yeah, they'll stick through those challenges.
So that's a good segue. Sixes are. The ones on the Enneagram that have two types, they're a phobic and a counterphobic, because some of you, I have had a friend that says, okay, well, we're both sixes, we're married, he does things totally different than I do, okay? It's because a phobic six is somebody who's gonna give in to their anxiety. They're gonna sit there and worry and just go inside themselves and imagine all the worst things that could happen, okay? A counterphobic six is somebody who is going to plan the mess out of that fear. The worst thing that they could do is to not expend the energy to make a plan for their fear and for those worst case scenarios. So they look very different.
Authority.
Okay, so good time to mention sixes love authority. Some sixes love authority. It gives them a sense of structure, a sense of safety, a sense of security.
Yeah, and I think the phobic and the counterphobic, I mean, those terms can be confusing because of the connotation that they bring. But the authority is huge in the sixes world, and the phobic and counterphobic sort of subtypes demonstrate that well. Phobics seem to rely heavily on authority to provide them that structure. They tend to trust authority as a way to help them manage that anxiety. Counterphobic sixes, on the other hand, they do not trust authority. It's a major problem, and they will challenge it. They tend to use their masterful question asking skills and devil's advocate skills in order to challenge that authority until they earn that trust. This could be expounded upon for quite a while, but this is just a quick snapshot of those two sort of subtypes.
Yes, and I don't want to rush through this part, but we need to talk quickly about the true self sixes, and you can find some of this on your handout, okay? So the true self is really who you are in Christ, okay? We need sixes to show up. We need sixes to be healthy, because you guys are the ones that make our society run. You plan for things. You are courageous when you settle that inner voice. You're steady and trustworthy, and you're great at pitching in. You guys are awesome when you can quiet that inner critic.
Yeah, and I think, sorry to interrupt you. I think that all that worst case scenario planning and contingency planning in the true self six really starts to come out of you in with this sense of courage, or I think more specifically, an unwavering faith.
Yes, absolutely. When a six is truly healthy, they are truly the most fearless number on the Enneagram.
So, yeah, that's six. Yeah, you guys.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And so, in keeping with what we've done in previous weeks, we do have a target six that we're going to bring up here in just a minute. But I also, before we do that, I need to take a couple minutes just to share thoughts about relationship with sixes. And this is my privilege this week because my wife is a six, as she has alluded to. But it's not necessarily privilege, I don't think. I shouldn't have called it that, because we are going on an anniversary trip this week. So I have to be very careful about how I describe relationships with sixes. Well, I do. So no. As Sarah, one thing that's the story you shared, Sarah, about the water and your sister. The one thing that hit me when you said that is you jump in as a seven and you're sitting there thinking, it's going to be okay. And your sister is articulating in her head, is it going to be okay? I mean, there's a huge difference there, and that's the life of a six. And so thank you for sharing those stories. And as Mark and Sarah so well pointed out, several things about sixes. Trust is huge. If you're in a relationship with a six, don't lose them. Don't lose their trust. Don't lose them giving you the benefit of the doubt, them giving you your trust. You want to protect that, or that they trust in you. You always want to protect that. Sixes can often be overly characterized as pessimistic or negative, but I want to say that's not necessarily true. It's just when you compare or contrast the six to any other type, they appear overly pessimistic or negative. For instance, in our case, there may be a sense that there is a chicken little, you know, in the sky is falling kind of thing, but that's only because the chicken little lives with the Mr. Sunshine, overly optimistic, everything is perfect and going to be okay thing. So it's like, you know, the contrast is not necessarily that they are negative or pessimistic, but that they may live with someone who is overly optimistic. It's a big responsibility that the sixes bear to be the forecasters for their family, the forecasters of threat. So show them compassion in their desire to take care of you. Worst case scenario thinking, as Mark and Sarah alluded to, considering all the what ifs, not just for their families, but the communities that they're a part of. This is a six's love language, so accept it. Don't dismiss the what ifs that a six gives you. And I'll say that for several reasons. First of all, a six might just be right. In fact, most of the times they really are right. And so you do need to listen to their threat forecasting or their what ifs. It's important to do that. Another thing, and this is whether it's in community or work or relationship, sixes are great judges of characters, so listen to them when they tell you a concern or a thought. Yeah, we're not supposed to judge, but there are some of us who are really good at it. don't tell a six that they don't need to worry, that everything's going to be fine, because that's just going to feel very patronizing to them. And last, I want to just say, Christopher Ewart says, if a six expresses their concerns to you and you respond to that with ambivalence, that is like a dagger in the heart. Listen and engage and hear them. And the last thing I guess I do want to share about life with a six, you know, we all have, the truth is every personality type does have tendencies of being helpful, a helpful driving aid while sitting in the passenger seat. Or some people might call that backseat driving. And it's not limited to personality type, but I will suggest to you that sixes might be the most helpful of all personality types when it comes to being additional eyes on the road. So when Karen and I are driving, she just wants me to see everything that she sees. And it's not that she doubts that I'm a good driver, and you may want to respond to this, but because, well, there may be times when she doubts my driving skills, but when she says, watch out for that car as we're driving down the street and it's pulling into a stop sign, it's not just, do you see that car? It's not just, do you see that car pulling into the intersection quickly? It is, do you see that car running into us and having an all-out accident that's going to put us in the hospital? It's this forecasting of the worst case. You know, the car may be really easing up to the stop sign, but she sees it as going very fast and going to run right through the stop sign. Or there is also just the only other example I'll share is, so like if she's fully engaged in something else other than helping me drive while we're driving, like maybe she's looking at, you know, responding to a text message from one of her sons on the phone, and all of a sudden I maybe need to make a little adjustment. I mean, just a slight adjustment because, well, for various reasons, but if I have to make a slight adjustment, a little jerk of the wheel, there's this automatic, oh no, and it's not because she's seen anything, she felt it, and it's like we were Thelma and Louise going into the camp. But this is the last thing I will share. Sixes do have this great desire for security and safety. And as Mark and Sarah shared, they may have been raised in a place that was filled with some form of unpredictability. For various reasons, might have lost faith that they were going to be protected. But for those of us who are in relationships with sixes, or a six, for those of us who are in a relationship with a six, let me just say that you have an amazing opportunity to be their safe place. And if you are a six's safe place, then the blessings that come back to you in love and loyalty and care and concern are just amazing. Protect trust, don't dismiss their concerns, and always listen to your six. Okay, our target, our interview, our person that we love dearly today is someone we all know. Aisha, will you come join us up here? Aisha Naismith. So Aisha served with Jason and Jennifer how many years?
Eight
years in our youth ministry, and she's now our missions coordinator at Harp of Hills. We all know Aisha and love Aisha, and she and Karen are going to just talk about being a six. Aisha's going to share with us, but before you do that, I just want to speak these words and make me hand this microphone to you. In fact, let's just do this. So, Aisha, for you as a six, let me just speak these words over you. And this is from Lamentations. Yet this I call to mind, and therefore I have hope. Because the Lord's great love, we are not consumed. For his compassions never fail, they are new every morning. Great is your faithfulness. And we do say to ourselves, the Lord is our portion, therefore we will wait for him. So, dear sweet Aisha, you want to tell us about life as a six? Or whatever?
Yes and no.
Okay.
My sister six up here, 11. By the way, he tries like a bat out of you know where. My daughter-in-law will testify that. Sorry, just had to say that. Okay. Aisha, how does it feel to be a six?
Oh, how does it feel? It feels very unsettling, uncertain. There's a lot of uncertainty and crippling at times. There have been times where I've been frozen in indecision or not being able to go forward, but then knowing that I can't not, that makes any sense. It's exhausting mentally. It's always vigilant and paying attention to what's going on.
I feel you. Okay, how do you feel like sixes are made in the image of God?
Like Sarah said, we're protectors, we're loyal, we have a focus on community. I think that's one of my favorite parts, is how important community is to me and family, and maintaining that for myself as well as everybody else. We are attentive, we're hopeful. I mean, being able to manage fears and anxieties every day, but still think that it's worth doing.
Tell us a little bit about the prayer practices or spiritual disciplines you engage in or most enjoy and how they connect with you, a six.
Okay. My favorite is praise and worship, and that mostly because it gets me into my own head and I'm able to focus on God and his goodness and his attributes, and then not about me, and I don't have to focus on what's going on and how things can go wrong. Another one is a prayer journal. It's good to for me to write things down, get them in black and white, and I can just be done with them. It's a way of processing through the day of or the week. Gets me into the loop. Mm-hmm. Because there are nights when I don't stop thinking and it keeps me up, and that's not healthy. So, and I also like to have it a record of things I'm praying for or worried about or anxious about so that I can go back later and see how the Lord has delivered me from it or
be grateful that it showed up. It's always good to be grateful in that way. I like to memorize scriptures. I'll write scriptures on my mirror with a dry erase marker as a way to focus. Another way to get my mind and hold my thoughts captive. So.
Can you tell us about what you need most from relationships?
Trust. Acknowledgement of fears, and sometimes those fears are valid, and sometimes they're not. Yes, I know that sometimes my fears can be irrational, but a lot of times they're not, and we have to think and process. We are not, we're not trying to kill your fun, I promise. Something I had to tell the teenagers a lot in youth group is that I'm not trying to keep you from having fun. I'm trying to make sure that you're safe and secure, and nothing happens to affect anybody. And just acknowledge a bit of that, and I mean, just take a minute to let us to think and to process and make a plan. Let us plan, please.
Let us plan, please. Thank you.
Can you do one more?
Yeah.
Are you still going?
No, okay.
Okay. What do you long for as a six?
Okay. Freedom from self-doubt and second guessing. That's a lot of why it takes long to make a decision. Trying to reason out what's next and whether we're gonna take the wrong step or whether we're gonna mess up things for everybody else. I long for confidence and discernment, whether I'm having a rational fear or an irrational fear. Like I know the spiders are not getting to get me, but I still forget. So yes, I recognize that it's irrational, but at least I'm at a point where I can laugh at it now, as my roommate will know. I long for consistently trustworthy advisors and people, authority figures. I think I'm a phobic six, so I need authority figures. I need to not worry about all of the responsibility that an authority figure would assume. So that it only works if I trust the authority figure.
Yep.
I long for more energy and drive to act with courage. That's something that I struggle with. I would love to be a great decision maker. It won't happen, but I would love to. But then ability to be adventurous and an excitement to try new things. That's something I definitely long for.
So Aisha, I think she's a phobic six. I think Bill Prady, as a shepherd in this church, will tell you that I am a counterphobic six because I question them all. Where are we going? What we're doing? What we're thinking? What we're planning? What's going on with this? What's going on with it? He's very kind to me. So what is sixes need? Sixes, like everybody in the head triad, they need to develop a posture of inner silence. And so that's more than just being quiet, just not talking, although it includes those things. Sixes have to develop this place where those voices in their heads just go. Because, you know, like we said, the ones have that inner critic that is talking to them all the time and saying, you're not enough, you didn't do well enough, all these things. Sixes have an inner committee of voices that are saying, maybe this is the right way, or this is the right way, or this is the right way, or this is the right way. And it is continuously going on. And so we have to make all of that stop for a moment. And when those things get quiet, then the voice of God can be heard. And we have to, I had to do a lot of work around trusting God. I didn't realize this until I started doing this work, but I had this really crummy image of God where I thought that if I messed up, if I broke a rule, if I made a bad choice, if I didn't find the right way, that he would zap me. And I couldn't have told you I thought that. In fact, if you had said that to me, I would have said, that's ridiculous. That's the craziest thing I've ever heard. But as I started doing this work, I realized that's exactly how I saw God. And so as I learned to develop this place of silence, as I learned to work with those practices that we have handed out to you all, and I loved Mark's language about excavating, you've been excavating shame and feelings of shame, I've been excavating the fear thing. I started to realize that those voices were largely the voices of my parents, who actually were very loving and kind people, but that's just for whatever reason, the way I interacted with them, it was not the voice of God. When I started hearing the voice of God, when I started realizing that God was full of love and compassion and mercy and kindness, I realized that he cared way more about how I feel than what I do. Way more about who I am than the choices I'm making. As I've become a grandparent, I am starting to decide that God's love may be way more like grandparent than parent. I had this, I see grandparents shaking their heads. I had this moment with a grandson not too long ago where he had gotten in really big trouble and he needed to be in really big trouble. I mean, what he did was not okay, but it happened in the other room, and he came out of the room and I was standing there and I saw this look on his face. He was so down. He was so sad. He was so upset. He was kind of angry. It was just a bad moment for him. And it just, that look on his face just triggered this feeling of compassion. And I just had my arms out. And he just ran over. And I got to wrap him up in this big hug. And I said, buddy, do you just need some ice cream right now? And he said, yes, I think if I could have ice cream. Never mind that he just had ice cream about an hour before. Don't tell his parents. But we had ice cream. We talked about how he felt, and we talked about what had happened. We talked about how he would move forward. And in that moment of safety, and I think somebody getting him, he was okay. And so that's what I had to learn about God. God is that person. God just, he helps me be okay. He helps me feel safe. And now I'm learning, as I feel safe, I can go out into the world and I can help others feel safe. I can lead, I can be courageous, I can have great faith, I can do all the things that God made me to be and do. So silence is super important for all of us. So be about your practices, find the one that connect, not all of them will, just find the one or the ones that you like, that you enjoy, it's about enjoying. And next week, we'll do The Wonderful World of Sevens with Mark and Sarah. And then we'll have our last week where we're going to look at the Enneagram through the lens of Scripture way more deeply than we have. So it'll be a good wrap-up for us. I hope you'll be with us. Have a good week.